This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
From the Chippewa down of the big lake they call Gitche-Gumee. Lake, it is said, never gives up her dead when the skies of November turn gloomy. With a load of iron ore, 26,000 tons more than the Edmund Fitzgerald weighed empty. Good jibbing crew were a bone to be chewed. When
fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you from beautiful Fort Worth, Texas, in the elaborate, state-of-the-art Trinidad World Recording Studios, my studio here in Fort Worth, where we seek to record you, to enlighten your musical life through the podcast. All of my adventures, all of my experience, and shared experiences with friends throughout the state, all just thrown out here on the table in front of you on the P2 Podcast to try to give you some perspective, some sense of what's going on out there in the world of music. And to help us do that today, folks, our old friend, a Pritchett producee, one of the first, really.
Oh, yeah.
And a contributor to the podcast, already in the past, formerly of John's Guns, now going solo out there writing songs. The great Nick Verzosa is here. How you doing, Nicholas?
Good to be back.
The couch here, back on the IKEA sofa.
Good coffee, good couch.
Did you wipe that couch down? You know, Kurt South's been sitting over there for a while.
Kurt, he was down in College Station with me a couple of weeks ago.
Y'all did a show at Fitzwillie's, right?
Fitzwillie's, yeah, my unplugged deal. That was
unplugged
a lot of fun.
With Kurt and Nick out there.
Oh, yeah.
They still have the stage outside.
They do. The patio is good.
Is it covered?
It is. They put a tarp.
They used to have a tarp up there.
They put a tarp over it, and then it rained, and they rolled it back. So there's a big bubble of water in it, and I keep waiting.
Just hanging in the balance.
Just for that unlucky guy sitting under that.
Maybe at that precise great moment of the show, it'll just burst open.
Boom,
just wow, you know?
You hit the right chord, and all together.
That's right. It just
explodes.
Comes crashing down.
It's part of the show.
Years ago, we did a full band gig out there and had a... the rain was always a problem at Fitzwillie's. Mm-hmm. We'd play outside, and then about 4 in the afternoon, the clouds would be gathering, and you'd be debating, man, do we move all the gear upstairs?
Yeah.
It wasn't until I gained some status, just the smallest shred of stature, where I just go, look, man, we'll set up one time, and then that's it. So if you think it's going to rain out, then let's just set upstairs, but we're not moving it at 9 o'clock. We're not going to break everything down and move upstairs. That's like playing two gigs in the same night.
It is. It
for the
is.
Same bar tab, you know?
That's the worst part of the gig.
That's always part of the thing when we do private parties or festivals. And any band's thing. A lot of people are like, well, man, what if it rains and all that? I'm like, here's the deal. We set up one time. That's really all we can do. And just because I have had situations where and you probably have too, you get all set up and, hey, man, it's looking a little thin. We're just going to move it inside. I'm like, dude. We've been setting up here for 2 hours. Yeah. Know? So that's the deal. When you book Phil Pritchett in the full band, or I'll say Nick, if he's going to come play, hey, man, if it's going to be threatening, have a rain plan, a rain idea. Oh, man. So you and South played down there.
Right.
Where else have you been playing recently? I see your name up here a lot. Fort Worth.
Yeah, Fort Worth has been good.
Are you living here or are you living in College Station?
I'm still in College Station.
Yeah.
Trying to run the ship from over there. But, I mean, it's the living situation. I'm set up pretty nicely down there for somebody trying to be a full-time musician.
Yeah, man.
It's, you know, no rent, no bills. You can't complain.
Hey, that living in the BCS is affordable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very affordable.
Good deal.
You hear that, musicians? If you're out there, you want to be in a band, and you live
right.
If you live in like Austin, where it's expensive.
Yeah, or Dallas or somewhere.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
Oh, come to College Station.
That's right.
I'll set you up.
Talk to Nick. He knows the lay of the real estate land down there pretty well.
Totally. I'll get you a nice cheap place. I'll get you a side job.
Yeah.
I've worked just about everywhere else you can imagine in College Station.
Well, indeed, I met you working at New York Subs, man. The now defunct New York Subs.
Now it's some stupid like martini bar.
I saw that. What's the deal? Well, that was my place even before you worked there.
I know it.
What was the guy's name? Austin used to run it.
Harkness.
Yes. Harkness. Son of Ken.
Oh, Ken Harkness.
Ken Harkness, a great man, ran the New York Subs sandwich shop by SMU right over there on Asbury. Where I grew up in Dallas, man, we ate at the New York Sub all the time. Ken Harkness was in there. And then his sons, opened one in College Station where the full band frequented. Oh, and on any night the full band was playing in College Station, you could find me and Stu and Blue. Many generations of the full band.
Right.
Back to Lynch and Stolly and before. Eating a free 12-foot-long sandwich, watching the big screen. Nick bringing it, just giving us a free 32-ounce Budweiser.
There you go. There's the beers.
That's right.
Chuggers.
And then it was open to like 2.
It was.
We'd play the gig and go back over there.
It was open to 4.
Is that right? Yeah, it was 4. Just, we've had some late nights in there. Went over there and eating in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
God, it's a shame. And then we went over there, you hadn't been there in a long time, but we went over there. I was trying to just, indoctrinate and ingratiate myself with whoever the new guy was behind the counter,
Sure.
Hey, it's Phil, man. He's some other guy to give me a free sandwich and some free beers.
I was gone already.
Maybe produce the record, You weren't there, but somehow I'll keep it going. And it's some martini place.
Oh, no.
I was devastated. Well, you have been busy writing songs, as always.
Right.
And, man, you've recorded with our old friend Walt Wilkins.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
You went down to, what's that place down there? Whatever studio he's got.
Jumping Dog Studios.
Jumping Dog Studios.
Cedar Park.
Yeah, Cedar Park, Texas.
Great engineer, Ron Flint. He was, he was awesome. Nice.
Did you just bring in local guys or friends who played the musicians?
Yeah, I mean, to tell you the truth, Walt took care of everything I needed.
Yeah.
He set me up. Mr. Caro's played on it and stuff.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, his guys.
And got a few guys into overdub some stuff. Rich Brotherton came in. He played a little
bit. Oh, did he really? Yeah. Cool, man. He's a good guy. Great player.
A younger guy.
Did you bring that Strat that was like cut off?
No.
He didn't? Have you seen that?
Yeah, I have.
That always intrigued me a lot.
He did play this really cool instrument on the record, though, on the second track. It's something that Walt found. Some random thing, and it's an octave mandolin. So it's like mando that's a little bigger. It kind of sounds like a banjo,
Bit. Is it 8 strings like a mandolin, or is it more strings?
No, it's 8 strings, a mando, but it's bigger, and it's got a lower tone to it. Sounds really cool.
Yeah, that is cool. I'll have to check that out.
He's a freak. I mean, he just picks anything up with strings, and he was like, I played one of these once or twice before.
Yeah, and just finds a way to do it. Is he still playing with Keen?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Cool deal, dude. I mean, he's been with Keen forever.
Hey.
Hadn't he 10 years?
Go with
longer
what works.
Than that,
it's
maybe.
It's been the same band forever. Yeah.
Yeah, dude. I first saw him playing with Bruce Robinson back when I lived in Austin. Mm-hmm. I think that was his main gig for a long time. But, man, so what else do you – how long are you down there recording there with Wilkins?
Oh, gosh. We did a 5-song EP.
Yeah?
Gosh, I mean, we were –
just went in for like a week or something?
In and out, five days.
Like recording all night or just sort of 9 to 5 kind of deal?
9 to 5.
Yeah.
Like about, we averaged about 8 to 10 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And got all the tracking done. I mean, with the help of all those guys there, we got all the tracking done in a couple of days.
Right.
And what was left was vocals and overdubs. And
right.
That's it. After that, we got a
five days straight.
5 days straight.
Good deal, man.
In and out.
Good deal. Walt Wilkins. I've seen Walt. He's got some, label here in town I don't know much about. It's called Blue Boot Records.
Right. I've seen
they've been around here in the studio doing some things.
Oh,
I haven't really met them all, but someone's like, man, they got Walt Wilkins over there doing stuff. And So I know he's got, he's always got new stuff he's working on.
Right, that's great.
We played the charity show here that John Reynolds and Catholic Charities mm-hmm. puts on with Walt and Max last year. So that was the last time I saw Walt. I don't know, it was about a year ago.
Awesome.
I guess. But, man, what a cool guy.
Just he is.
He's just kind of got that zen-like quality, you know?
He really does. It's weird. It's just you get worried. I was worried. I was thinking 5 days. Oh. And he's hard to get a hold of, man. That guy,
yeah.
He doesn't carry a cell phone.
Yeah.
Do anything.
A true artist.
He just doesn't want to deal
with
it.
Hard to track him down.
So I was freaking out before the recording gets started. I'm like, I got to talk to Walt. I got to know what I'm prepared for.
Yeah.
I got to do that. And he talked to me and said, all you got to do is come in, play good, sing good, and relax, and trust me. Oh, yeah, and bring some checks.
That's right. Made payable to Walt.
But other than that, he just made me feel better about it. He's like,
yeah, man.
No preparation. I go in there, and I'm like, okay, well.
It's tough for me. Give me a little feedback. Help me to, you know, because, you know, as a producer and a guy that's
sure.
overseeing the recording process.
Uh-huh.
You've recorded here with me and with Walt.
And that was a great experience as well.
Yeah, well, thanks. Thank you very much. But. It is hard because what you realize is as much as guys come to you thinking, I mean, they're coming to me for my help.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're not really looking, and I was this way when I recorded places, you're really not looking for their total vision to be cast down on what you're doing. You know, every guy needs, they all need to hear something, you
sure.
know, and not that you just want to tell them what they want to hear, but part of the producer's role, you know, you try to discern, look, this guy, he's really worried about his vocals, or he doesn't think his songs are that good, or he's worried about the drummer, you know, or he's worried about the sound, or, you know, you're looking for things to set guys at ease about.
Right.
And it seems like the good producers, that's kind of what they're good at doing.
I think you're right.
Is not making the guys, because a lot of guys who try to be producers are good at making the artists very nervous,
mm-hmm.
and those guys don't do very well, unless it's just like Mutt Lang or somebody, and you're intimidated.
Yeah.
Right, you're intimidated by him. So yeah, the good ones seem like the guys that are pretty laid back and know what they can get. And that's always hard to convey to guys when they're in here.
Right.
Is if he just plays, the bass guy's playing and he misses one note. Goes, man, I think I messed up on the bridge. I'm just like, you know, I'm like, now do I want to say, yeah, we'll punch that later? Or do I want to tell him, look, man, we can just cut and paste.
We'll fix it.
The right note and move it back. It's not that big a thing. Don't sweat it. Does he want to play it again?
Right.
Does he, you know, does he think I don't hear his mistakes?
Right. It's easy.
Do I need to point out that he's playing it wrong? Or, you know what I mean? I
difficult balance.
It's a challenge.
Definitely.
You don't want to go, hey, you missed that note in the bridge. You go, man, is that going to hurt his feelings? Or is that going to make him go, ooh, Phil's really paying attention to what's
right,
going on?
Exactly.
I never know.
It's a difficult
you never
balance
know.
Because you don't want to come off as too aloof. Like, listen, man, I'm just taking your check and I don't really
Phil
care
didn't
about
even. Yeah, I mean, he's just going to redo it anyway.
And
he
don't
didn't care.
And you don't want to come off as like that hard-nosed guy's like, you will play the right note now.
That's right.
Do it. Be on your ball, you know, that kind of thing.
That's right.
Come into my studio, waste my time. So, yeah, I agree. A difficult balance to have that kind of even keel personality.
It is
about it.
It's a tough balance to strike.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, my other friends that I saw, Rose Hill, you know, Blake and
sure,
the old
yeah.
Texas High Life guys.
Sure.
They, you know, I produced that first record they did.
Mm-hmm.
One of my other really early ones, even before you guys. And then they did their last one with Rodney Foster in Nashville.
Okay.
So I've just been curious, talking like you and them, like, hey man, how does it? You know, of course, when you're here with me, it's kind of more like, you know, your buddies were in there just kind of making stuff. And, you know, you're going on to doing stuff with Walt or Radney, you know, is in a little different environment where you're a little more on the clock, a little more on your guard, maybe working with guys that you don't know that well.
Right.
You
yeah,
know,
that was the difference. Here we did the full band here, and there, you know, he wanted to use a lot of his guys and stuff. But
yeah,
it was different, but it wasn't really that different of a feel for
yeah.
me. You know, I was relaxed here and laid back, and I felt like I got off what I could here. And
did y'all record like in the same room, or is it like different rooms kind of thing? Like was it a
full room tracking, and
yeah.
then everything else overdub wise was well. I mean, some of the overdubs were in the tracking room, but
I mean, was it a studio with different booths and stuff like that? Or was it just kind of one big room?
It was a house studio, man. It was just like this. Just
okay, yeah, yeah.
Nice, a big tracking room, and then mm-hmm. one or two rooms set
isolation
aside.
Isolation rooms,
yeah,
isolation
rooms.
Real.
That's it. You know, with like not even like any special glass. It was like wrap the door in fiberglass,
yeah.
and put it up against the actual door.
Was it a Pro Tools type setup?
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
the engineer, like Ron was unbelievable.
Yeah,
And the way he worked with Walt.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a little bit of the trick, too, is Walt was a great producer, but Ron knew just what was going on.
Yeah, right,
the engineer, so when you don't have to worry about messing with the technical aspects of it, he can focus more on the producing aspect.
That's
of it,
right.
I guess,
you know, it's kind of a critique these days that the role of producer. I read an article recently in some magazine I read. One of those things that I get in the mail all the time. It's just said how the term producer's kind of got watered down a lot. That a lot of times when somebody's producing, they're really just Pro Tools engineers. Which isn't a bad thing, but it's a cool situation where you have, kind of like you did, you got a Pro Tools master in there, and then you kind of have the producer, you kind of have Walt, you kind of have this guy with the Zen-like quality sort of overseeing the proceedings. But, it's real interesting that, you know, you have so many people out there familiar with Pro Tools and can run the computer and do stuff, they become quote-unquote producers. But a lot of times that's a formula for kind of getting things to sound the same. And you kind of lack that...
I agree with you.
...that artistic element that maybe somebody can really, really bring to it. Like, man, he's not really the knob twister guy. He's sitting back.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a good many guys out there that aren't producing this album and who's never really been in a band, never been in a musician. They just, you know, they learned how to run Pro Tools and are technically proficient. But you're kind of like, man, maybe he doesn't have the appreciation for... atmospherics, maybe,
exactly.
That other guy's going to have.
They line up all the hits great.
Yeah, they know how to...
But there's no, like, soul in the song.
That's right.
Exactly.
That's right. So,
I agree with you.
Well, it sounds like you had the best of both worlds there.
I did. You know, and Ron was... I mean, it's not like Ron was artistically deficient either. I mean, that guy was probably the biggest cat in the room and nobody knew it.
Yeah,
Toured the world a couple times. Mm-hmm. He played in the band called 2020 in the 70s.
And oh,
he was
the
lead singer. And he toured the world a few times, had a couple... gold records or something.
Cool,
like
man. Yeah.
He was out of this world. And his ear was just like,
yeah.
Oh, here, sing this harmony.
Like, yeah. Yeah, all right.
Right on.
Well, cool, man. Well, Nick Verzosa is here talking about his solo record, solo EP he's made with Walt Wilkins. A follow-up to the great John's Guns record we did here at Trinidad.
Oh, yeah, John's Guns.
With all the guys in here. Singing and banging into stuff.
Testing out the studio.
Getting a feel for the space. Cause that was the first day I was in here.
Totally.
We still had like paint on the walls.
Oh, we
drying,
did the first
you
few
know.
Tracks at the
cement the other
box.
Place. Yeah, yeah, with the other box. Yeah, yeah. Well, coming up our next segment, we're going to talk more with Nick Verzosa. You know, take his pulse on what's going on out there. I always like to talk to guys who are out there moving around. Hey, man, what are you seeing? Who are you talking to? Who do you hear a lot about? Who do you not hear much from? We're going to take Nick's pulse, man, on what's going on out there. And Clubland and Music World. You're listening to the P2 Podcast. We'll be right back.
Make your own rules, superior scenes, in the ruins of her ice water mansion. Old Michigan steams like a young man's dreams, and the islands and bays are for sportsmen. And farther below, Lake Ontario takes in when Lake Erie can send her. The iron boats go as the mariners all know with the gales of November, remember.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, enlightening your musical life with some real life experiences, some general thoughts on what's going on out there. From someone out there banging around and living it. Did you know you could come here and record at the studio or book Phil Pritchett and the full band anytime you want? Just call me, 817-733-5256. Our old friend Nick Verzosa is here speaking with us today, joining us for the podcast, enlightening us with what's going on, talking about his new record, his EP made, produced by the great Walt Wilkins, our good friend down there in Austin. Does he still live in Austin?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was in Waco for a lot before that, way back.
Is that right?
You know, that's where he met Pat and all those guys.
Oh, sure.
And he's been in Austin for a while. And I met him when he was living in Nashville.
Oh, okay.
Walt Wilkins. Man, he told me that great story about meeting Guy Clark.
Oh, yeah.
Did I ever tell you that story?
No, let's hear that story.
I don't know if you want me to tell it, but I when I was living in Austin, I mean, in Nashville, someone goes, man, you know, lives there is Walt Wilkins. And, man, he'd already had, I'm trying to think if he'd already had those Pat Green cuts. I guess he'd had.
I think so.
He had a publishing deal going on up there. And
right.
I think he was expecting his first child. And anyway, we went over to ate lunch at the Sportsman Club. And, yeah, he told me a story one time. He was in one of those songwriter bars, you know, the Longhorn or something. It's not there anymore. But he looks over at the end of the bar, and there's Guy Clark sitting there. And pardon me, Walt, if some of this is wrong, but I'm going to give a general rendering of it, PG-13 rendering. But he looks down, and there's Guy Clark, and he goes, man, I just got into Nashville. Of course, I'm the biggest fan in the world.
Right.
So, yeah, I go up to him. I just say, man, Mr. Clark, I just want to shake your hand. Thanks for everything. This is a big inspiration. He said, Clark's been there a while. He's like, what are you doing? What? You know, oh, well, hell. He goes, well, hey, can you take me over to the studio? I got to get back to the studio and had a few drinks or something. And Walt's like, well, sure, or something. Or I can't remember if Walt gave him a ride to the studio or if he met him over there. But Walt goes, man, next thing I know, dude, I'm going to some studio where Guy Clark's, you know, recording. Because I walk in there, there's like, you know, an engineer and, you know, maybe some girl with a guitar, and Clark comes in. He goes, it's getting kind of late at night. So they start up. I can't remember if he watched him record a little bit. So Walt's just like, man, I'm just flying the wall. I'm just sitting there like, wow, Guy Clark, holy cow. He said, but he's really nice and, you know, but kind of brash, kind of storming around the place. And so it ends up real late. They start kind of passing the guitar around, playing songs.
Oh, cool.
And, yeah. So Clark plays one of his big ones, you know, just plays like L.A. Freeway or something.
Sure.
And Walt's like, oh, my gosh. And after he's done, the girl says something like, man, Guy, that's just got to be one of the greatest songs ever. Uh-huh. You're the greatest songwriter ever. And Clark goes, no. He goes, Towns Van Zandt's the best.
Sure.
Everybody kind of goes, oh, yeah, Towns. Yeah. So they pass the guitar around a little more. And then the guitar comes back to Clark at some point, and he plays, you know, Desperado's Waiting on the Train or something.
Sure.
And the girl says, man, Guy, really, you really are the greatest songwriter ever. And Clark just kind of sits there quiet for a minute and just goes, yeah, I know. and then it was Walt's turn, and he plays one of his songs, and Walt goes, so Clark says, well, you play something, and Walt plays a song, and Clark just like puts his head in his hands and just moves over and just puts his head like right in the hole of the guitar.
Uh-huh.
Like with his head down. And Walt goes, man, I'm just nervous as hell. He goes, I'm just playing this song and singing right into Guy Clark's
ear.
Yeah, right, I mean, there. Right into the top of his gray, wiry head is in my lap. And I'm just playing this song. And when it's over, Clark just looks up and goes, well, it might have been a little better if you just switched the third verse with the second verse. And then Clark goes, or maybe it's the best song I've ever heard. Oh, hell, I don't know. Just kind of goes back.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot. I've heard that sounds familiar.
But I was enraptured by that story, man. And he said it kind of got late and it kind of got weird. And,
yeah.
And so, you know, anyway, he Walt ended up leaving. And I think years ago, or maybe like months later, a year later, he ended up picking up Guy Clark at the airport. And he said, I didn't want to embarrass him because it was kind of a wild night, or kind of, you know, Clark was kind of right. out there.
Way out there.
Yeah.
As if it wasn't weird enough.
Well, yeah. And he did kind of say, you know, Mr. Clark, he said, we have met once. It was a while back. It's the studio. It's kind of a late night, kind of a weird night. But Clark kind of goes, oh, yeah, I do remember. I do remember you or something. And, so anyway, friend of Guy Clark, Walt Wilkins.
Great, great story.
Yes, man. Yes, great indeed. Story. Well, man, what's the pulse out there? You're out there playing, talking to some younger guys. You said you're gonna be pushing one of the singles to radio.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Should hit June 8th.
That's always an adventure. It's always an adventure.
Yeah, adventure indeed. Yeah, that's what's, you know, I'm running around visiting with radio stations and shaking hands and meeting all these jocks and meeting all these program directors and stuff. And
yeah,
you know, that I mean, a lot of them are really cool people.
Uh-huh.
A lot of them have been really helpful already so far. And I'm just kind of doing this pre-thing so that I can put a face with the name.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Whenever the promoter sends out the single and everything like that.
But that's right, man.
So far, it's fun. Like you said, an adventure.
Are there a lot of guys in that business? I mean, do you look at a lot? There's, I get stuff from promoters and people, and I never know if one's better than the other. I mean, they'll all cash your check, I guess.
It's tough. I mean, the way I did it, I guess I kind of looked at who she works with
yeah.
and who you know, I guess the respect on that level, and not only that, but I mean, you know, money was an issue, of course.
Sure, yeah, yeah, right.
Promotion isn't cheap, and but it's worth what the penny
right.
is if it does well for you.
Sure.
It's kind of a gamble. You know, that's why it's an adventure, I'd say.
Yeah. Well, that's one of those experiences that you go through at some point, and you learn from it one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it's something that leads to bigger and better things,
sure.
I guess.
Yeah, you always hope for that, of course.
There's so many, though. I mean, you don't go to college to get a degree in radio promotion.
No,
you don't.
You sure don't.
There's no degree.
Sure don't.
I'm certified by the I went to Harvard to learn how to get people's songs on the radio.
Right.
You know, it's just some dude, you know. I guess that's all you can look at is just who else he's gotten play for. You're like, right. Hey, you know, we got this guy out there.
But it's credibility, and it's like it's word of mouth, and it's putting in your time, putting in your dues. Just like, you know, they're like musicians too, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, put in your time, and people hear about you and
make those connections.
And if you're a good people person, then people want to work with you.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
So hopefully it works out. We'll see. It'll be a lot of fun. That's for sure.
Absolutely, man. Are you doing the kind of going the iTunes route? You already got it. You've already got it out there.
Yeah, got actually
CD got, Baby, or did you go somewhere other direction? Or
no, we
do
have.
That?
I'm working with a group, like kind of an independent management group. It's not really a management group for the most part. It's more like they give me what major labels would give their artists, but on an independent level. So I'm not tied to them by like, you must produce this record for us, et cetera, like a major label would. But they provide me with all the, you know, good little fun stuff, like distribution.
Yeah,
and all kinds of stuff.
Is that who this is?
They're
Indie Extreme?
That's right, Indie Extreme,
So how does that work?
Well, she's great. Her name is Kathy Douglas.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's done for me, basically, I mean, she brought me Walt in the first place, and after that, I was like, wow, okay, that's impressive in itself. I probably wouldn't be.
She out of Austin or up here?
She's, they've got a office, the main office is in Nashville. They have a Music Row office in Nashville.
Yeah, cool.
They have another office in Texas in Tomball.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a mover and shaker type of thing. Like, make the connections, make the networks, because that's all the music business is about anyway.
Yeah.
You know, who you know and who likes you, and who's going to give you opportunities, because it's not like there's any lack of talent.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has talent. There's a lot of talent out there, but
is there?
Think, you know, is that what we're about to talk about?
I wasn't going to let that just slide by. Just I don't know.
You know, I
well,
said
but
the same
I know what
you're
saying. I know what you're saying. It's it seems like the guys, you know, who get ahead are guys who seem to have, you know, some been able to connect a lot of the dots.
I agree. But the guys that stick around are the guys that have both.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. That's right. That's right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's longevity. That's the name of this.
So
game,
Indie Extreme, they do all your digital distribution. They have
a deal with Universal Music.
Okay.
So it's just going.
You just
out.
Sign up for that. You just walk in and
I guess
you say, hey, I want to do this, and I say, all right. They're a service.
Yeah.
Is that what you would say?
They're a service.
So
yeah,
you went in there.
Kind of like a middleman type thing.
How'd you get hooked up with them? I mean, how'd you know who they were?
You know, doing the whole songwriter rounds, you know, it goes to show you're not wasting your time trying to be a songwriter.
Right, right.
When I did these things, I went down and I played in a great listening room in LaGrange called the Bugle Boy.
Yeah.
And I was playing there and met a few people. And one of them was a lady named Connie Mims. And she runs the whole Nashville Songwriter Association International in Houston. And through her, she sent me some contacts, and somehow through all that, I got to Kathy.
Yeah.
And Kathy liked my stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
She liked the John's Guns record, you know.
Sure.
Kudos to you, sir.
There you go.
and after that, she...
I'm sure she liked parts of it.
She was down. She was down. She'd get parts of it. There was a few PG-13 parts in itself, I'd say.
I'm just kidding.
Hidden tracks, et cetera.
Yeah. No, a lot of good stuff there. Yes, you just kind of connected the dots. That's the term of this episode of the podcast.
Definitely.
Connecting the dots.
Definitely.
Well, man, that's interesting, dude. So you said, man, I'm trying to make this record. So they said, hey, call Walt. And,
Kathy had a connection with a girl that runs a venue in Tomball called Main Street Crossing.
Yeah. I played there last week.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lisa.
That's a cool place.
It was a really cool place. And Walt plays there all the time, too.
He does, yeah.
And she knew him real well and got him to come out and talk to us after one of his shows.
Mm-hmm.
I just sat down with Walt, uh-huh. with Kathy there and Lisa, and he just liked what I was saying. And it was like, yeah. before he even listened to anything, he was like, man, I like songwriters. So I get a good feel. Let's do it. And I was like,
Yeah, like that?
Just like that? Cool. All right. So after
Man, we're all looking for gigs, man, even producers. You know?
I mean,
you're it's rare to have somebody out there really trying to make a go of it and you know, wants to is ready to show up and play and you're like, hey, sure, let's do it. Well that's exciting, man. Old Wilkins, man. Is he still moving in the is he still writing songs? Those guys up there in CSAC and
Yeah, I think he's...
Speak highly of him. Does he have a publishing agreement somewhere? Does he just sort of moving his own songs around to people?
You know, I don't know.
Is he still doing that stuff?
I don't know anything about that. I know that he's doing a lot of stuff with Miss Caro's now. And
yeah, I know he always does his own stuff.
Yeah.
Does he still pitch his songs to people?
I don't know. I'll have to talk to him. I'd love to sit down and talk to him about that side of it because I'm really interested in that side of it also.
Yeah, the publishing stuff. And, and of course, he knew he came up... Pat Green he was kind of a mentor to Pat Green, really. I mean, that was really Pat's main guy coming up and wrote those songs. We did an episode of Crazy Heart. Talk about the movie Crazy Heart. Have you seen that?
Yeah, that was a cool movie.
Yeah. You know, not to compare Walt to Bad Blake. I'm not doing that, but there's definitely that element.
There's
sort of
a legitimate comparison.
Yeah, man.
For a lot of guys in Texas.
Kind of the young guy who's selling at arenas, and you're like, hey, man, I kind of taught that guy everything he knows. Well, that was sort of the impression I got from that film. I go, man, there are guys out there, like Walt, kind of these guys that, a little bit, you've been around a little longer and certainly know a hell of a lot more about music and writing songs and things like that. And, the young guys gravitate to that because that's the real deal. And Pat was certainly that guy to Pat early on.
Yeah, that movie was spot on, and it was great.
Yeah, South was in here. We were talking about it.
With old Ryan Bingham's getting an Oscar. And
man,
stuff.
Wasn't that great?
That's crazy.
It was so
crazy, man. Unbelievable. But
very, very cool thing. Yeah. We were just talking about how those as time rolls on, that those guys, there's just so many guys that Bad Blake,
right.
that Jeff Bridges character is just dead on, you
know?
A lot of Fort Worth ties. He had, of course, T-Bone Burnett,
Steve Bruton.
Stephen Bruton produced the soundtrack.
Right.
To do the podcast, I never really listened to the soundtrack that much. I mean, I heard the Bingham songs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some cool stuff, man. Talk about an open-ended production approach, man.
Yeah,
have you heard that, the soundtrack?
No, I haven't.
Crazy Heart? I mean, just the sound of it is just...
Raw.
Man, it just sounds like... They put like a couple of 57s in the room and just sort of
nice.
Played it. And I was like, I mean, even because, I've listened to T-Bone Burnett produce stuff all the time. And I don't know, maybe he produced it just like he did all this stuff. I don't know if he did or not. But at least my first impression of it was just the Alison Krauss, Robert Plant stuff that he did and the new Costello stuff. It's definitely got that gooey, nice feel to it.
Sure, yeah.
And the Crazy Hearts is a different thing.
Right.
It sounds like some of my demos. So some of the tracks. Yeah, I'm kind of like, man, that is open.
They're going
open
for
ended.
Concept. Yeah.
Open ended.
Yeah.
Man. But it was cool. Very, very cool. So, yes, man, very, very cool stuff. Yeah, and Stephen Bruton, an Austin guy and producer, the late Stephen Bruton, who grew up here in Fort Worth.
Yes, he did.
With T-Bone. And so much cool stuff there. And then Bingham lived up here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
He was running around with McCoskey and some of those guys over at the Stockyards. I don't think he lived here very long, though. I met him over at the what's the rest of the steak place up there in the Stockyard? I met him one day.
Cattleman's?
So just ran around. Yeah, I was one of those. He was eating lunch with my dad's friend Steve Murren, who owned that building that the first Trinidad World Recording Studios in that.
Right.
Did you ever go to that place?
No, I never.
I don't think you did.
I saw the pictures of it.
Yeah, yeah. Online, there's some stuff of the old. Place where we did that High Life album and our High Tide in the Heartland, deal and Bingham was around there, so it's cool, man. Crazy Heart, a lot of old Fort Worth ties. But who else do you hear a lot about, man? What kind of stuff you've been listening to lately? Anybody new?
Or old,
just been listening to a lot.
As far as it goes, I've really been kind of I've been diving into a whole lot of the folk Americana side,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I guess maybe, you know, hanging around with Walt was kind of more of me pushing into that whole thing.
Sure.
Because the Missy Caro's sound with all the like the gospel harmonies and everything, that's just
right.
great, great music.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
I love that. So, I mean, I've been listening a lot to Band of Heathens out of Austin.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
Those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Actually, a good friend of mine, I'll pimp him out a little bit. My friend Matt Harlan
mm-hmm.
is an unbelievable songwriter.
Yeah.
And I love the way he does his stuff. It's really different stuff.
Right.
You know, incredible guitar player.
Where's he from? Is he?
He's from Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah, incredible guitar
player.
Has
his own band or?
Not really.
He just kind of runs
a singer-songwriter.
Sure.
I know he'd love to play with a band.
Sure.
For a little while, he was running around with me and Sean, our bass player,
mm-hmm.
and a good friend of mine, Jeremy Todd from The Woods,
yeah.
another band out of College
Jeremy,
Station.
Yeah.
The four of us would do like a quartet, like a string quartet thing,
mm-hmm.
and run around and kind of fill full band gigs.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of fun
because
we'd
cool.
play Matt's songs, we'd play my songs, Jeremy's songs.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a Heathens type of thing.
Sure.
You know?
What's Sean? Sean's still in College Station?
Sean's still in College Station.
He still runs he brings out that nice PA he's got for our gigs down there at Zapatos.
Always available to you whenever you need.
It's always the bass player who knows how to run the sound
gear. Shoot me a call, yeah.
He runs out to run the board. I'm like, how'd you get into this? He's like, no one else really knew how to set it all up,
right.
man. So I had to do it. So you just fall into that kind of stuff.
Sean,
you know?
He's still hanging on.
Yeah.
He's still the loyal bass player in the band.
Writes his own good tunes.
He sure does.
He wrote that one on y'all's album, Pen and Ink.
Pen and Ink.
That's a very, very good
closer
song.
Closer to You.
Yeah, that's right.
And he actually co-wrote the title track with me at Buy Sell Trade.
Hell yeah, man. What about those other guys, BJ and what are they up to?
They've moved on, you know. BJ, he's...
John's Gunn's rhythm guitar player.
Indeed. He's moved on to, he's in the Air Force.
Is he really?
Yeah. Well, he was a Corps cadet.
Right.
And, after school, he had to fill his contract and everything. So he's in the Air Force. He just left last month, I think.
Is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
So he's in the Air Force, and Brad
drummer,
Robinson,
yeah.
He's still bumming around in College Station, working for the university now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he's playing in a band or two just on the side.
He was a good player.
Yeah.
I mean, technically proficient and knew his stuff, man.
Yeah, miss John's Guns. John's Guns was a good band, man.
John's Guns was a good band.
Very tight.
And good guys,
yeah.
man.
Yeah, yeah,
it was fun having y'all in here,
good
you know.
Friends, you know.
It was like, yeah, it was like being a part of the club, man, when you guys were in here recording. Good times. Well, send them all my best. We wish them all well. Hope some of them are listening to Nick's podcast here. Former John's Guns guys out there. Hope you're all doing well. It's your producer, Phil, speaking. Godspeed, gentlemen. We're going to see. We're going to send Nick over here to the rack of vinyl records here at Trinidad World Recording. If memory serves, I think we did some James Taylor last time.
We did.
We're going over there and browse and flip through, man. I don't know. We got everything from Miles Davis to The Doors to Sinatra over there. We'll see what happens here. See where Nick Verzosa's eye falls on the vault. And we'll get into the vault next. Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchett here, just making you smarter by just listening to this show on the P2 podcast. We're so glad you're joining us here this week. Nick Verzosa is here talking about Walt Wilkins and his new record. Man, giving us a feel for the pulse out there. What's going on with radio, the clubs, bands he's listening to? Well, we are here in the vault now. Now we get down to business. We rummaged those old records, those dusty records over there that Todd Snyder wrote and sang so well about. Man, anytime you're going to pull a Tom Petty record out, oh, we're going to get excited here.
It's Petty time.
We've done Kurt South picked Southern Accents one time.
That's a great record, too.
Great record. Sort of the yin and the yang. You had the side A really rock. B had some horns and some 80s-ness, 80s-ness to it, which Kurt found humorous. And I think Jordan Powell did. Jordan Powell came in, my old road manager, who now works for Miranda Lambert.
Oh, I saw Jordan in Nashville.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah.
Where'd you run into him?
I was up there about a month ago, like right before the flooding happened.
Oh, yeah.
Which was crazy, but I just went up there to kind of get my feet wet.
Right.
I guess that's a
so to speak.
Tongue-in-cheek. Man, that's horrible.
We'll edit that out in post-production.
Man.
All right.
Yeah, but I went up there with my friend Matt, who I was mentioning earlier, and we got to pitch to a couple publishers, and we did some NSAI stuff.
Cool.
And Keane was playing up there at the Ryman.
Yeah.
Okay. And so this is kind of a cool story. Keane was playing up at the Ryman, and you know Toby. Toby Scott's an old friend.
Used to run Keane's road manager now.
Right.
Used to run
with Stony. Yes. Stony Roo.
That's right.
And that kind of deal.
And used to run the third floor canteen,
He worked in a few bars in College Station.
That's right.
I'd say. But Toby's a friend of mine, and Rich was there as well, and he played on my record, also produced Matt Harlan's record. Mm-hmm. So
you had a few ins.
We had a
favors
few ins
to call in.
Yeah, definitely. So we were walking around. We wanted to visit the Ryman. We saw that Robert O'Keefe was playing.
Yeah.
And we were like, wow, that's ironic. They're playing this Saturday. So we send a call over to Rich.
Yeah.
And Rich is the nicest guy in the world.
Sure.
And was like, come have lunch with us. I'd love to see you guys. So we go, and we end up
Where'd
sitting,
you go?
So we went to, man, I can't remember.
Nashville.
It was a barbecue joint right there.
Right there off Music Row.
No. It was just outside, kind of out by Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Small. It wasn't a barbecue joint. It was a small, like, soul food joint.
They go there
all the time.
The grill.
Yes, I think so. And it was.
Oh.
I said barbecue joint because they have a pulled pork sandwich that's unbelievable.
I know which one it is.
Yeah.
It's like the Midnight Grill. Oh, I'm drawing a blank. Forgive me, Nashville. No,
it's
the
right there.
It's the I know exactly the one we're talking about. God, I've eaten everywhere there. Oh well, go ahead. It'll come to me in a minute.
Yeah, it definitely. But we go in there and we're sitting with Rich and Toby and. It just turned into kind of a Texas reunion because Robert came in and Hayes Carl walked in and we all had lunch. It was fun.
That's cool.
And ended up here and there. Later that night, we go have drinks.
Yeah.
And Jordan came. Jordan came along with Toby and all them, and Jordan was sitting there. A few other people. It was a really cool night for me and Matt.
That is. That's very cool.
We were meeting some of these people.
So you were with Keane too, huh?
Yeah, and he was...
What do you have to say?
Not much. Sat back, drank on his beer. And just not much. You know,
not known for saying a whole lot.
Had a knowing smile of, I know. I'm Robert O'Keefe.
That's
you
right.
Love me.
That's right.
Here I am wearing an Aggie hat, and he's thinking to himself, this kid knows me.
That's right.
He knows who I am.
There's no question about that. So Powell was there, huh?
Powell
just hanging around.
Yeah, he was really cool. And we talked about you and we talked about Miranda and the old days. And one thing led to another, and there's me and Matt backstage at the Ryman Auditorium.
Good deal.
Watching
yeah.
Robert O'Keefe and Randy Rogers play.
Yeah.
It's
excellent
crazy.
Times, man.
Crazy.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, man, back to the business at hand also.
Business at hand, indeed, yeah.
Powell came in here, Jordan Powell, and he did, much like yourself, lunge for hard promises, Tom Petty. So, man, I can't believe you haven't done Damn the Torpedoes up until now, but here it is.
Great record.
Big Red, as we refer to it. Jimmy Iovine produced. This is the one that just set Petty off, man.
Indeed.
This is the one he went to the wall on, went broke.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there's that great Running Down a Dream. It's a Running Down a Dream, the documentary.
Love that.
Where they talk about how they just... Refugee, they just recorded it like 400 times. There's just like 400 versions of us playing it because they just wanted to, they didn't do any like overdubs really on it.
Right.
They wanted to just sing it, play it, everybody, so if someone missed a note, it was just, just start over, So he said, there's just rolls of tape somewhere.
It's a complicated song, too.
It is, man.
Boom, boom, boom.
Yeah.
It's just lots of different dynamic in that song.
You know, Petty's out. He's out. I feel like every tour, I feel like it's going to be the last one with these guys. You're always like, this is his last tour, man. This is the last tour. We all went to the one a couple years ago at American Airlines. So.
Right, yeah. He'll be back in September.
Yeah, he's coming back. He's coming back with ZZ Top, I think.
Yeah.
Or this summer, maybe.
Yes,
he's,
that's right.
I saw they were going to do some shows together.
Man, I might have to save my money for that.
Man, yeah, Petty. So he'll be out there going strong. I guess as long as people are going to pay and show up, man. Of course, he's still great. I mean, he hasn't. Petty benefits greatly from not being an embarrassing middle-aged ass shaker like some guys. Like Rod Stewart, tough to go out and play that rock and roll.
Agree.
Whereas Petty, he just sort of stood there with his Telecaster, just playing along. Even Springsteen suffers from, are they still expecting me to jump on the piano?
Right.
Dear God, that kind of energy. 58. Can I do it? And he can do it, but his knees kind of not what it used to be.
He did
the big slide at the Super Bowl. you know what I'm saying? You're kind of like, man, but that's his show.
Right.
I think there'd be a lot of pressure to do that. But Petty, not known for his high wire
acrobatics.
Doing backflips off the piano or something. He just sits there and plays,
Mid-tempo rock and roll, man. Good stuff.
So what else we got on there? What's the Reed Side A to me there? What do we got on
we
there?
We got Refugee.
Of course.
Here Comes My Girl. Even the Losers.
Man,
that's
just like three greatest hits.
Those
are three greatest hits right there.
Shadow of a Doubt and Century City, man.
I love Century City. That's kind of a good ghost track
there. That's that middle of the road.
Yeah. Right before you flip over the record, man. Get on side B. They got anything on there?
Don't Do Me Like That.
Oh, there you go.
Greatest hit, of course. You Tell Me, What Are You Doing in My Life, and Louisiana Rain.
Louisiana Rain.
Golly, that's a great record.
I know. Man, you look at his, the greatest hits that came out, 10, 15 years ago. But yeah, about four of those are on there.
Yeah, exactly.
I just kind of set them in motion after that. Jimmy Iovine, who did is he only listed as producer on there? You see his name on there?
Yep.
He was the producer. There's some good stuff in the Petty documentary of Jimmy. He's sort of this New York guy.
Right.
He started Interscope Records. I mean, very successful. But he's he's just kind of yelling at him. I think he was a demanding producer type guy.
Right. It was like the button heads.
He just goes, "You guys are gonna this." This drum kit is punk ass.
He
goes, "You're going to sound like the Motels on this record." I had to look up who the Motels were. I'd heard of some trashy, thrashy punk band.
Exactly. So, somewhere he saw it in some small New York club, the Motels, something like that.
Yeah, man. So he's trying to, but I mean, it was, this record does have it. It's not as just raw, just blah, it's maybe probably some of the earlier Heartbreaker stuff. It's definitely rocking, definitely cool, but definitely a little polished, and kind of ready for the world kind of stuff, man.
Oh, yeah.
But Damn the Torpedoes.
Right, that great... The
great album title.
I love
title.
The story behind the whole... It's like, screw that, we're releasing it. They didn't want to release the record like that.
I can't remember how that went down. What was that?
Like something with the record company. Didn't want to release a record or something like that.
Petty was always at odds, always fighting with the label. What was the story? He was on the cover of Rolling Stone, and he was holding a dollar bill. There's a famous story to that, too. Like something like they wanted to sell it for $9.99, and Petty insisted on selling it for $8.99, or maybe it was $8.99, $7.99. But anyway,
he increased the prices.
He fought really hard to keep the prices kind of low.
Right.
And he was on the cover. I'm like, "Tom, we'll give you a dollar.
I'll give you a dollar."
Something like that.
That's awesome.
It was something. I'll give you a dollar to buy my record or something. Always at odds. Always fighting the man.
Right. Pioneer.
Don't guys like us today just yearn for the days where to make it in music, you just got in a van in Florida and you drove to L.A. with a few tapes.
Right.
And you just got you a deal.
Oh, yeah. Just walked into Capitol Records.
That was it. We want to make a record, man. And that was it. That's how you did it. You didn't record on Pro Tools in your garage and then wonder what the hell to do.
No, just a tape machine in your van.
I know.
In Florida.
at least if you didn't get a deal back then, you didn't get anywhere. You didn't put yourself through the torment of thinking you were maybe already somewhere.
Right. And you could call yourself Mud Crutch.
That's right. Have you heard any of that stuff?
Yeah. Dirty, dirty stuff. Great stuff, though.
I love that one. That
Mud Crutch.
I don't scare easy. Love that song. Call ourselves Mud Crutch. It's the worst name we could think of. Well, Petty's going to be out there on the road. Is that this summer he's doing the ZZ Top dates?
I think so.
And I think, gosh, he'll be everywhere. They can't let it go, man. Why let it go? People are going to show up and pay, right?
Exactly. Why
He's really, as far as, you see these ticket prices for some of these tours are $400 or $500. And Petty's always, I think I paid like $68 or something for the American.
It's not
home.
Bad.
It's not too bad.
It's not bad. My friend got a few really close up tickets, I think, for $100, $120 or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And Merrick, you know, in a big stadium like that, that's yeah. reasonable. Mm-hmm. Extremely reasonable.
And I noticed his merch was just crazy at that date, man. We went and saw him at the American Airlines.
Is that right? 15 t-shirts and
oh, man,
25 hats.
Oh, 200. 200, man. They were just. And those concert shirts are just made out of that thin. It's not even like
right.
the thread count of that thing has to be like, I don't know how they measure that. Like napkin thickness, you know,
right.
but just $38.
Yep, $38 you know, bucks.
Or something. $45 for a white t-shirt with just Tom Petty written on it, you know.
That's good marketing, though. That's the kind of shirts that the ladies want.
That is, that's right.
They like those soft shirts, and they make their men buy it for them.
That's right, man. That's
oh, marketing.
Man. No kidding, dude. They know where to position those big tables with all that stuff at the show. Well, go see Petty, man. And, you know, it's almost like Dan the Torpedoes. If you don't have it, man, check it out. There's some good ghost tracks on there. You know, Century City, Louisiana Rain, stuff like that. Of course, you got the big hits on there.
Of course.
Refugee, Here Comes My Girl. You know, gosh, it's just the big red one, man.
That's one of my favorite songs,
yeah,
Here Comes My Girl, because it's just off
a little know, bit
just
hopeless.
I talk
yeah.
I'm gonna talk through this and then here comes my girl.
I love when you look me in the eye. I wonder if they did all those live, man.
It sounds it.
I don't think he overdubbed his vocals back then.
Probably
or maybe
not.
Maybe it still doesn't now.
Big tracking room, you know.
Yeah,
ready
they just
to go.
Yeah, they just play it, man, probably straight up. Iovine just banging on the glass yelling at him.
Do it again.
You know, in his New York accent. What the hell are you doing out there? Well, our guest has been Nick Verzosa, John's Gunsman, Gone Solo.
Gone Solo.
The record is called The Smoking Gun EP.
The Smoking Gun EP.
The yeah. Smoking Gun EP.
Kind of
EP.
A little hint there to the
yeah, man.
Comes
so what website can we go to get it? Or whatever. Of course, it's on iTunes and stuff already.
It's on iTunes.
iTunes.
You can get it anywhere digitally. You know, anywhere you can find it, but nickverzosa.com.
Yeah.
It's up and running.
Oh, Kyle wrote a song with Kyle Hutton on here.
I did, yeah.
Is that right? Yeah,
Kyle's
yeah.
A great
I know
guy.
Kyle's a good guy, yeah. How'd you run into him?
Another connection.
He's
with...
He's known him for a long time?
Another connection with Kathy, with Indie Extreme.
Uh-huh.
She used to run him. Like she was his manager.
Oh, okay,
and
cool.
She said, you guys should get together.
He in Houston?
Right.
Doing
yeah.
He does all kinds of stuff.
Magnolia. He's doing...
Booking
he's got a
stuff.
Really, really cool show
yeah.
Down at the Dozy Do.
Dozy Do, yeah, that's yeah. what I've been hearing about that.
He does
the show.
People in.
Bringing people in. Kyle Hutton. Look back to Texas. Something lucky. Let it go. Back when love easy.
Maybe it's back when love was easy. That's a little
love
typo.
A little typo
so,
on that.
So get your album now.
The first edition.
First edition.
Collector's item.
Exactly.
Back when love easy. I go, man, that's an artistic way to say that.
Yeah.
It just leaves out something essential, but... When it's all said and done, Nick Verzosa, produced by Walt Wilkins, the Smoking Gun EP.
Right.
See where our John's Guns guys have gone, man.
The single will actually be that typo, so that adds to the value of
adds
the first
adds to the value
edition.
Of the first pressing.
It's the first single.
That's right,
Back
man.
When Love Easy.
Back When Love Easy. I got the original copy, man, with the typo on the back. That's kind of part of the fun, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the recording the track where the dog starts barking in the background.
Exactly.
Like, you know, we're like, how will we do that? But then we all got used to listening to it. We thought it was funny, so we left it in.
And it's kind of one of those things you can't get mad because
that's
just
right.
Got
you
in,
can't plan it.
Just got you just got in 2,500 copies, and you're like, oh,
yeah, right.
Well,
oh,
let's
well.
Make something.
What
of
are you
it.
Gonna do? Are you selling? I mean, are you selling physical products somewhere? Is it just all digital kind of deal? I mean,
no,
at,
physical
at the
product,
shows. I
yeah,
mean,
at the shows
yeah.
and online, you can buy it. We got a shopping cart and everything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
yeah. So, NickVerzosa.com, VERZOSA. That's how you spell it.
Good deal,
and,
man.
You can get them $7. Digital
yeah,
copies are $5.
There you go, man.
And let me know what you think.
Heck yeah, man.
Yeah.
Nick Verzosa has been here. Tom Petty, Dan the Torpedoes. Well, go download Nick's stuff. Nick Verzosa's stuff. John's Gun stuff at iTunes. While you're there, pick you up some P2, man. We got all the stuff out there as well. Or you can go to my own little page, p2tunes.com. It's off limits, man. Just for those of y'all in the know, p2tunes.com. You can get any Pritchett record for just $4.
$4.
Including the voluminous Alive and Alone, the live album's acoustic record that we did recently.
Oh, cool.
That we did. I did. It's just me on stage for 26 songs. Enjoy. For $4. Or call me here at the studio. Come make your record here. You too, Verzosa. We'll do the next one here in the big room
next
door.
You got it.
817. 7335256. You can even bring in Walt to produce.
Okay,
I'll engineer for you back there.
It'll be fun.
Then you'll get me and Wilkins working on your stuff.
Oh my!
We can just butt heads in there while we're drinking coffee.
Exactly. Yeah.
Fight over what drummer we're going to use. Although if he wants to bring Rich Brotherton in, I'll be cool with that.
Is that okay? That's okay. Yeah.
Hell yeah, man! That'd be a great time. Well, thanks for coming in, Nick. Great stuff. Good luck with the new EP.
Thank you.
The Smoking Gun EP. Check it out on iTunes or nickverzosa.com. Next week, man, we're going to be back on the podcast every week, enlightening your musical life. We believe in music, man, in the independent man's ability to make it, whoever you are. So go out there and make something happen. This is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast. Signing off, we'll see you next week. Take care.
Why this old town just seems so hopeless. I ain't really sure, but it seems I remember the good times with just a little bit more in focus. But when she puts her arms around me, I can somehow rise above it. Yeah, man, when I got that little girl standing right by my side, you know, I can tell the whole wide world that she had it. Hey, here comes my girl. Here comes my girl. Why I've done it. It just seems so useless to have to work so hard and nothing ever really seemed to come from it. And then she looks me in the eye and says, we don't last forever. Catch myself wondering, waiting, worrying about some silly little things don't add up to nothing.